This is Barry Fitzgerald from GHI, and you're listening to the Para-X Radio Network.
Are you a skeptic? Don't believe in ghosts or the paranormal?
Are you divided by the true, by the true, by the true?
Welcome to the Paranormal Divide with host Kurt Smith.
Welcome, everyone. It's June 23rd today. Welcome to the Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith. Tonight we're going to have a great show. So before I bring my guest in, let me give you guys a little background of who we're bringing in tonight. It's Heritage Paranormal. We have Heidi Brumlow tonight. And talk about an awesome guest. Wait till she has listen to what she has to talk about. It's going to be great. And here's a little bio for everyone. HPS was founded by Heidi Brumlow and Scott Tolbert in August of 2007. Heidi is the director of intuitive studies, and Scott is the site scout coordinator and case manager. We each have extensive experience with other groups and networks and have decided to branch out on our own. As paranormal investigators, it is our goal to help educate and alleviate the fear and panic often associated with the paranormal and any suspected paranormal activity. We choose our names because we believe in the preservation and protection of historic sites, from businesses to homes, to understand the future, is to preserve our past. It is the ongoing mission of Heritage Paranormal Society to further our understanding of the paranormal and to help educate the general public as well as to assist them in providing answers. Using psychic and scientific methods, we try to debunk or prove or disprove any suspected paranormal activity and try to see if the scientific and psychic approach aid each other in findings or evidence. Last but not least, we are the founders and directors of Phantom Fest, our very own para convention to meet other groups, share ideas and advice, have seminars, and investigate together. This October will be our second Phantom Fest. Everyone, I want to bring in our guest tonight, Heidi Brumlow, who is from Heritage Paranormal. Heidi, how are you doing tonight?
Great, Kurt. How are you?
I'm doing good. I just gave a little bio about your group. If you want to, if you have any websites or if you want to give a quick shout out to anyone, go ahead and say hi to everyone and give us a little little background about yourself.
Okay, I want to welcome everybody, and we have a website, heritageparanormalsociety.com, and phantomfest.com, and this October will be our second annual Phantom Fest, and we're hoping more groups and investigators can come out and get to know each other and investigate together.
Excellent. And Phantom Fest, where will Phantom Fest be this year?
It's in the same town. It's Abbeville, South Carolina, which is just over the Georgia and South Carolina border. It's a very historic town. It's full of history, and we have about 8 investigations lined up for that Friday and Saturday night, so everyone will get to investigate everything we have. And last year, we had some interesting evidence at one site, so everyone who came last year is already booked to come back, so we're really looking forward to it.
It sounds pretty interesting, and I myself and my wife will definitely be there in October. That sounds very fun. If you can, let our listeners know, what got you into the paranormal? Was there a personal, you know, episode where you experienced something, or has it been a passion? Let our listeners know how you got into the paranormal.
Well, I've always had an interest in the paranormal ever since I was about 9 or 10, and roughly about 8 years ago, I was taking pictures of this old church near my house, and I got some interesting pictures, and my daughter was like, well, you know, you can join a group of people to investigate this kind of stuff, and I was like, no way. So she gave me the site ghosttowns.com, and I became friends with Patrick Burns, who's now on True TV, Court TV, Haunting Evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And he kind of took me under his wing, and after a while, I branched out and investigated with other people, and I still see him occasionally at Ghost Talk in Savannah.
Sweet. Now, what's it like? I myself haven't personally met Patrick Burns or talked to him, but I hear a lot of good stuff about him. What was it like to work with them and have him, you know, do investigations with them?
Really, it was great. When I met him, it was long before the Court TV show Haunting Evidence. But he was able to teach a lot, and him and his wife are very involved. still with the paranormal, and I came up with the name Ghost Dog. He was running a contest to name his convention, so I came up with the name.
Ghost, that's awesome. And were you able to attend this past? I know they had like a web feed for Ghost Talk this year. Were you able to attend it this year?
Yes, me, Scott, and Kelly and Emma, which are all Heritage members, we all went together. So it was really a lot of fun.
And how many members are in your group? Is that?
We have about 10.
And now when you bring on members to your to your group, is there some that, you know, where they have to go on, like, you know, practice investigations, you sit with them and chat from? Because, you know, you have a lot of people out there that are thrill seekers and just want to go out there for the fun and not want to go out there for the investigative part, you know, the research. How do you handle a new person that comes into your group?
Well, we allow them to come to a meeting, and we prefer for them to go on three, like, practice investigations or, like, unofficial investigations, so they can see how we work and how we set up and kind of how we are, and that way we can see how they are, and at the end of the three, they can know whether they're a good fit for us or whether we're a good fit for them.
Okay. And how long has Heritage Paranormal been? It looks like August of last year?
Right, almost a year.
And you, I like when I was reading your bio that you're the director of intuitive studies. Can you elaborate a little bit about that for our guests? Because I like that, because it's something different, because all these other groups, you know, you have, you know, lead investigators, you know, case managers. That's pretty interesting.
What our intuitive studies is a bunch of, well, right now it's just like three, but people who are sensitive or can pick up psychic information, and what we'll do when we go on investigation is the intuitive team will go through and write notes.
Okay.
And we will not be together. We'll pretty much go alone and write notes, and we'll give it either to our base operations manager, or we'll give it to Scott being the case manager, and afterward he'll kind of read it when he's going through evidence and see, you know, kind of how right we are, or if we've, you know, obtained information that could help the homeowner.
Now when you usually, you know, with the, you do this walkthrough, is this before everybody else shows up?
Well, it kind of depends. Sometimes people have already showed up, but usually while they're putting together the equipment, mm-hmm. or talking, interviewing the owner, property owner, or homeowner, that's when we'll pretty much take our little walkthrough for the intuitive team.
Now, is it just yourself, or do you have other members that are part of your intuitive group?
Yeah, well, I have two others, so we're a group of three.
That's pretty interesting. I mean, I myself would like to, if we ever get a chance, I would love to investigate with your group. That, just to see how that works, because we're just a small group ourselves. Peach State, I'm part of that. We have four members right now, and we just
okay.
started in December. So it'd be interesting. I've only seen a psychic work once. Would you consider yourself a psychic, a medium, a clairvoyant?
I would consider myself a clairvoyant, because when we were scheduling the very first Phantom Fest, I had been coming up with information, you know, talking with different residents and people around that town. And before you knew it, by the end of the convention, I had about 13 people lined up wanting to speak with me.
Awesome. That's cool. And now when you're lining up, when your group is lining up in investigations, because my show, Paranormal Divide, I like to base my show on for new investigators, for people to pick up things and to learn things. Now, does your group have a case manager?
Yeah, that is Scott Tolbert. He's my co-founder.
Okay, and Scott, usually does he go out and, like, when he goes out and finds a private home or a historical site, does he spend time with the homeowner and, like, chit chat on the phone, or does he go in person? What would you recommend?
Actually, he does both. He'll talk with them on the phone, and a lot of times his first point of contact is in person, and I think it's really best to meet the homeowner or the property owner in person. That way they can kind of get a sense of who you are, mm-hmm. and that you understand what's going on. That way you can kind of understand them.
And after that, generally, how long would you think, for a new group, how long would it take generally to do like if you're going to go do an investigation and you're interviewing the homeowner, does it generally take? And is there any specific questions or tips that you can give any of our listeners that you would like for them to know? Even myself, because I learned myself. I want to learn myself some more.
Oh, well, wonderful. Scott will talk to them in person for probably about an hour, and then right when everybody's setting up and we do our walkthrough, he'll take the property owner in and ask them questions about the property, ask them really a wide range of questions to medical illnesses, plumbing problems. We actually have a list, so if anybody's interested, if they contact me at heritageparanormal.com, my email's on there,
mm-hmm.
and I will email them the list that Scott uses when he interviews people. It's about 3 pages, but it's pretty in-depth. That way we have the information where if we get something that sounds like a pipe rattling and we're aware this is like a 70-year-old house, that might be something we can look at. So he really asked a wide range, you know, about the activity, and I would be glad to share the interview form. It's really in-depth, and it helps. It gives us really a lot of information.
Awesome. And that was that they can contact you at heritageparanormal.com?
Yes. I'm actually Heidi@heritageparanormal.com, and they can email me directly, and I'll be glad to email it back to them so they can use it.
Definitely. Now we're talking about, you know, we did like a pre-walkthrough of an investigation. What is your favorite part of the investigation? Do you like going in and doing the investigating, the EVP sessions, taking photographs? Do you like watching and listening to the evidence afterwards? What's your favorite part of an investigation?
I love EVP sessions. It's really... I mean, just still astonishes me that you can sit and ask questions, and then when you listen back and you get an answer, that's just, like, mind-boggling. And I also love helping to review the evidence afterward.
Now, you talk about that you're a fan of EVP. Do you prefer digital or analog?
Either one is really fine. I mean, it is just so unreal. Right now I use digital, and I've had some pretty good luck with it.
And what specific type of voice recorder do you use?
I have a Panasonic.
A lot of people. I myself use Olympus software. When you're going through and reviewing your evidence, what software do you like to use?
Oh my goodness, it's on my husband's computer. But it's one that he bought. He's our base operations manager, so he loves putting it on his computer, and we'll listen to it together. So I'm not sure what it is, because he's like the computer guru of the group.
Okay. I use myself. I like I like Sony SoundForge. Just for the listeners out there, Audacity is a good program too, and it's a
yes.
free download. And it's very user friendly.
I know he uses Audacity, but he's got actually two he uses.
And I can Adobe Audition, that one, if you're not used to Adobe, that one can be a little frustrating. I've worked with it myself, and every time I do something, it sounds like something mechanical is coming out.
Oh, no.
Okay, we talked about, you know, voice recorders and digital and analog EVPs. When it comes to photography, do you like using digital? Some people prefer 35mm film. What's your favorite? What do you like to...
I love digital. I really love digital. I think the most of us, we use digital. We have a photographic specialist. She has a 35mm and a digital that she takes, and she's had success really with both of them, but I prefer the digital.
I've only got digital, so I've never used 35mm. I know film can get quite expensive. That's why everyone uses digital, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, you know, this topic's going to come up, and I have to ask, is, you know, with the photographs, it's everyone's favorite subject to talk about, orbs. Can you give us your opinion on orbs and we'll go from there. Let's first get your opinion on orbs.
Well, orbs has been considered in the paranormal the great orb debate. It can be very tricky. You'll find people who do believe in them, and you'll find people who don't. The only orbs that we really will take a second look at are ones who put out their own lights. And the majority of the time, you have to pretty much discount dust and bugs and moisture, and there's so many explanations, but if one's putting out his own light, we kind of look at it twice.
Have you captured many orbs, or is it a lot of times, you know, with me, it's dust or moisture, because you can tell where you're at. But have you captured many orbs that have emitted their own light?
Pretty fair and few between. I would say we probably have 3 or 4, and the rest of them are just the lovely dust orbs.
Everyone's favorite, the dust orb. I was going through I've gone through a few photographs with the investigation. I was just on at Barberton, Ohio, and I found a picture on my Olympus camera, and it's just full of orbs. I sent it to everyone. It's a dust orb palooza. It's like they're having a party in a convention.
Oh, yes.
Now, I have a question from the chat room. This is for my wife. She wants to know, are there any type of cases that Heritage Paranormal does not accept? It's a two-part question, and that's the first one.
Oh, boy. That's a loaded question there. We haven't really turned down any. I mean, we'll go to it, and if we feel we can't really handle it, that there's something more going on, we will refer it out to someone else.
Okay, and there was a follow-up to that, too. I guess my wife, I didn't read her question right. She's going to yell at me. I guess I should have also included if you felt uncomfortable at a situation. So I guess that would be included with the answer that you just said.
There's been several that I have felt uncomfortable with, but it's probably just the activity that the homeowner was experiencing. And being an intuitive, you can kind of pick up more than the average investigator. So there's been a few times, especially one in Phantom Fest, the second night, the Saturday we were there, I had to actually leave a site.
Have you ever had a case where there was a demonic entity at the place that you were investigating?
Actually, we think we've had two encounters. One was right before Scott and I formed Heritage. We were at a place near Athens, Georgia, and two people ended up getting scratched, and someone ended up getting a broken hand in the basement. You were smelling sulfur and just felt negativity, and people were gagging, and it was just a really unreal situation.
Did you feel uncomfortable when you were there?
Yes, I did, very much so.
I have not had a chance to experience that yet, but it sounds like it can be a scary situation if you don't know what you're doing in there.
Very much so. The second incident we had was actually at Phantom Fest. The first night we had just a person who worked at the inn to host our Phantom Fest, and she was actually channeling on the second floor of this site and ended up just breaking down and crying. And that very next night, I ended up having to leave.
Because
I was feeling just very uncomfortable.
Were they able to, was any of the investigators at the Phantom Fest, were they able to figure out if they can get like a name or what type of entity was there?
Well, we got several. Actually, we had two cameras getting broken at the site, and they've seen shadows, and they got an EVP that came across the walkie saying it's time to leave. So everybody, of course, left. I had already left the site at that time. But one of the cameras from Asheville Paranormal, Angela, she had it, and she had a brand new digital camera, and the screen had been broken from the inside and pushed out on the LCD screen.
Wow, that's amazing. And can you give us the location of where this happened in Phantom Fest?
It was at an old jail, and we had, what was kind of bizarre is we had been doing an investigation in this town, and it had come to our attention from a guest speaker that we were holding Phantom Fest on, like, the 100th anniversary of a lynching.
Wow.
And he had been taken to the jail and taken out of the jail and beat and then hung. And that night, you know, we were, of course, having an investigation there, and a lot of people had picked up images of someone being hung, someone being beat. And it happened to be on the third floor, which is where the African Americans and the crazy prisoners had stayed. So we pretty much think, you know, we can't totally connect it, but we think it's more than coincidental.
That's awesome. And will, at this year's Phantom Fest, will that same place be investigated?
Oh, yes. That's the question everybody asks. They're like, we've got to go back there.
Awesome. And let's talk a little bit about Phantom Fest. Are you able to let us know if you're going to have any, what guest speakers are going to be there, or?
Yes. Right now we have two, but we're still booking. We have Murray Silver, who wrote the book Great Balls of Fire about Jerry Lee Lewis that became a major motion picture. He's from Savannah, and he does a lot of documentaries and books on the paranormal.
Awesome.
And we also have Denise Roth, who used to be an assistant to Ghost Town. She used to set up all the investigations and pretty much book Ghost Doc in Savannah. And she's going to be sharing tips about what she does to book such well-known places.
Yeah, because it seems like, when I try to get investigations, it seems like I have trouble sometimes, because it seems like every time I either email or contact people, I'm having trouble getting in hold of these people to see if we can do an investigation, or they're a little hesitant to agree to having an investigation done. So
right.
It sounds like the tips that she'll be giving out will help a situation like in my case to help book investigations.
Yeah, and she's really the best. She can pretty much get in anywhere. I'm so in awe of her. So Scott and I had talked to her at Ghost Doc, and we were like, you've got to come. With all the groups and people coming, you know, that's the biggest thing, is trying to build a good rapport with a property owner to get in.
Definitely. And that'll bring up a question in a little bit, but I have a question in the chat room from Stoner. Stoner's from Ireland, and I was able to meet him and his wife at Waverly this year. He has a question. He wants to know, you might be able to answer this, you might not be able to answer this. Have you ever interviewed someone who you suspected had a psychiatric problem? And how have you handled this delicate situation?
I haven't personally, and luckily that's something we haven't come across, but we've talked about the possibility. And really, that's a very touchy situation. If someone has some mental issues, you know, to try to explain to them that, you know, they might need some medical treatment. I know Scott, I had gone to Alaska back in March, and he had come across somebody who was saying that they were having some activity, but they were also on a lot of pharmaceuticals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind of a tricky situation. We do let them know, you know, sometimes medicine does have some side effects, so you need to check with your doctor if you're experiencing anything that is, you know, not normal to you, to kind of just pretty much show whether you have some kind of medical explanation for it,
mm-hmm.
or you're really having activity.
True. Because, you know, you're right, it is a delicate situation, and it's one of those situations where you have to I guess tread a thin line with the person, because you don't want, you know, to make the situation any worse than what it is.
Right, definitely.
Now, talking about I know you mentioned that you had two, we'll go back to we were talking about Phantom Fest. Is this a 1-day event, a 2-day event?
Actually, it's like a 2-night, 3-day event. It's being held at an inn. We have a special rate going, so people need to contact me, because you save about $15 a night, and it comes with a free breakfast, and we have, during the day, the seminars with our guest speakers, and then at night, we have all the investigations coordinated,
it's
so everybody can attend each one.
Awesome, and do you encourage... do they have vendors there? You know, I haven't been to a convention myself, but I've heard some vendor. You know, you'll have vendors there, you know, selling equipment and all.
Last year we didn't, but this year we're going to have some vendors with books, and also vendors with T-shirts, and also we're going to have our own Phantom Fest T-shirt. Actually, the registration is $45 for all of Phantom Fest, and that includes your badge, your welcome booklet, your T-shirt, and a little mixer that Friday night, so everybody can kind of get to know each other.
So it's like a meet and greet, you know. That's what you said on your bio, because what it is you want to, and I think that'd be cool. And my wife's listening. Yes, Denise, I would love to go. It would be an awesome, and I think we should, because it's great for everyone to just to meet a whole bunch of new people, you know, especially during the investigation part of the night, to see how each group does their investigations.
Oh yes, and it's a great way to make friends. We have made friends with Rock Hill Paranormal, and we actually invited them to one of our investigations, and they came, so it was a great experience.
It sounds very interesting, and we're going to be plugging Phantom Fest all through the night, if you don't mind, because I'm excited about it. I want to go, and I definitely will. Is there a website that people can go to view Phantom Fest?
It is www.phantomfest.com.
All right, everyone out in the chat room, please visit that website, www.phantomfest.com. It sounds pretty interesting, and it sounds a lot of fun. So book your tickets now, and it'll be fun. It sounds like it's going to be interesting. Lots of cool guest speakers, seminars, especially for the new groups out there, like myself. If there's any new groups out there listening, please come. We do have another question for Heidi. It's from my wife. And this is, do you think that having a near-death experience makes someone more in tune with psychic abilities or paranormal activity?
I definitely do, because when they experience something like that, it's a very spiritual thing, and they encounter something that, you know, everyday people very seldom get to encounter, and I think it makes them more in tune with any psychic gifts or abilities that they might have. They're more open to it.
Okay, I'm not psychic, but you know, reading, being read by a psychic and all that, I haven't had a near-death experience yet. I'm sure it'll happen. Maybe, I don't know. Hopefully not. but it's interesting, you know, near-death experiences and I guess you can also go. Have you ever had an out-of-body experience?
I personally have not, but I do have one close friend that I have worked on some cases with. She has several times, but that's something I have yet to experience.
And Denise has a follow up. She wants to know: Have you ever had a near death experience?
I personally have not,
okay.
Which is kind of interesting because I'm so, you know, intuitive and in mm-hmm. tune. But I actually have not. Mm.
I know I have not. I haven't experienced an out of body. I haven't had an OBE, and I know there's another one out there that I'm forgetting. There was a show a couple of months ago on CAPS Paranormal Radio. They had someone on with near death experiences, and I know there's another one. I can't think of it. If I can remember what it is, I will bring it. I will ask you, but I can't think of it right now.
Okay.
So we're gonna take a quick break, real quick here, Heidi, and I'm going to let everyone, if they have to run to the potty or get freshen up their drink, if Dave needs to go grab his three lucky beers, we're going to be back here in about 3 minutes. So if you can sit tight, I will be back with you here shortly.
Is this thing on? Okay, thank you. All right, people, settle down. We really have to get started. Now, first, a couple of quick announcements. For those of you who ate at the commissary this morning, the nurse would like to speak to you right after this meeting. Mm-hmm. After the meeting, Mrs. Torkelson. Yes, after. Thank you. I also want to remind everybody once again that the fountain in the middle of the commons area is not, I repeat, not a toilet. Is that understood, Mr. Kunkelmeyer? Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that many of you have been on the internet listening to some website called ParaX. I find this quite disturbing. I know you have enjoyed shows like CAPS Paranormal Radio with Dave and Tom, Ghostology with Brian and Anna Marie, Crossroads Paranormal with Mike and Chris, Mission City UFO with Mike Cole, Paranormal Awareness with Bill Metz, and the Ghost Divas Live in the past. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, I hear they've got a whole bunch of new shows, like Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith, Warning Radio with Brian and Baxter. That one makes me nervous. Paranormal Help Desk with Jeff Barnes, Ghostly Talk with Doug and Scott, and Ghost Chatter with Jimmy Morris. I loved him when he was with the Doors. That means that every evening, Monday through Sunday, there is a live show with live chat so you can speak directly to the host. And if you happen to miss the live show, they replay all the shows during the day. Plus, ParaX has the shows archived if you're looking for a particular episode that you missed. Now, people, enough is enough already. This has become very disruptive to your normal routine. I mean, with everyone listening to ParaX 24 hours a day, nothing is getting done around here. I mean, poor Mr. Finkelstummer hasn't bathed in weeks, and Mrs. Clapperpot won't even leave the computer to use the bathroom. That reminds me, the chairs in room 24 are going to be burned, so don't be using them. Mm-mm. Now, we really have to do something about this. So...
Excuse me, sir, but that episode of Cap's Paranormal Radio that you like, it's on right now.
Really? Right now? We'll talk about this later. Meeting is adjourned. Somebody put Mrs. Clapperpot's chair in room 24, please. Get out of my way. Not the mountain, Mr. Kunkelmeyer!
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Alrighty, we're back from our break. Hopefully everybody refreshed their drinks, went to the potty, flipped to the ESPN news real quick. I don't know if they did or not. Let's continue our conversation with Heidi. Heidi, you still there?
Yes.
So how are you doing tonight?
Great.
Are you enjoying yourself?
Very much so.
Sweet. Well, we just welcome you to the Para-X, and make sure you pass on to anyone that you can that Para-X rocks, and we have live shows every night of the week, and we run 24/7. And while during the break, Stoner from Ireland, he had a great question that he wants to ask. And this is a great question because I wouldn't even know how to answer this one. he wants to know: do you believe that looking at things with an unfocused eye, or something in the corner of your eye, increases the likelihood of seeing something paranormal?
Yes, I do. And I really was not sure about that until we had our first Phantom Fest. Murray Silver, who was going to be coming back to Phantom Fest, he used to be an assistant to the Dalai Lama. And they had taught him how to look at things that are in your, like, peripheral vision, how to look at things out of the corner of your eye, and you can actually see more paranormal things when you're not focused.
That's interesting, because I hear a lot that it's called, a lot of times that, all they'll say, it's floater syndrome. Have you heard of that, floaters?
Yes, I have, yes.
And what do you think about, what do you think about floaters? I mean, does that happen more often, less often? Is it actually something?
It could be something. I mean, it's something that I'm reading up on and learning. But after, he had come to the Phantom Fest and talked to us about the monks who were around the Dalai Lama, how they actually see a lot of paranormal things, really had us thinking, okay, if you're not focused, your eyes are not too focused on seeing things in front of you.
Have you personally seen an apparition?
Yes, I have. And I have a picture of one. Actually, it was at the very first place I ever investigated. And I had one of the feelings that I get about, just feeling very uneasy at the site. Mm-hmm. And, of course, my husband, who is not a sensitive, he said, well, I'm going to take the DVR and I'm going to go ahead and walk on down to the site. And I said, well, okay, I'm staying right here. So I was standing there, and I was taking pictures. And, of course, he's walking around, trying to get EVPs. And he's saying, I come in friendship. And I'm just like, what are you doing? So I took a picture at one of the doors of this location. And right after he walked by, I caught a full-bodied apparition in the door.
Well, and what was your – I myself haven't experienced it yet. But what was your immediate reaction when you saw it?
Oh, my goodness. I think I quit breathing for a few minutes. And I called down to him, and I said, you need to come see what I just got on
film. And he was just like, oh, yeah, whatever. So finally he looked at it, and I said, what is this? And he said, it's a man. And I said, okay. I said, evidently the person you were talking to, you know, wanting to be friends with, he actually manifested.
Wow, that's awesome. And is that the only time you've experienced an apparition?
Well, at the at Phantom Fest, several of us saw an apparition moving on the third floor. So that was just unreal because it was several people that saw it.
Now, a lot of people say when they see apparitions, they see it's like misty, you know, see through. The apparitions that you saw, can you describe them a little bit?
The one at Phantom Fest was basically just a shadow. It was very dark because this site has no power to it, but it has a light in the very, very back, like a street light, and we were standing outside, and all of us saw it walking around the windows. It has several windows. So I've heard varying stories that they can be like a regular human being, or they can be misty, or they can be like a shadow.
Okay. Now, you mentioned, you know, shadow. What's your opinion on shadow people?
I have seen a few shadow people, and I definitely believe they exist. I've seen some, and it's really hard to explain.
Like a lot of people, you know, they'll say that it's like when you're going through, and you know, you're in the dark, you don't have lights. They say that it's your eyes playing, you know, adjusting and you know, not focusing properly. That they say, you know, it's nothing. But I've been to Waverly twice. And I can tell you that shadow people do exist, because it's, you know, after a while your eyes, you know, adjust to being in the dark. Wouldn't you agree with that? After a certain period of time, your eyes adjust, and you know, it's like, you know, you're like, okay, I just saw something. But then you like, okay, you look back, and it's like you just want to make sure. You want to make sure you see it a couple of times, because, you know, is it really my eyes? And then when you have fellow investigators with you, and they, you know, they see the exact same thing, is it really shadow people? I would say yes, and it's not your eyes, because if you have more than one person verifying that shadow people exist, or even an apparition, there's got to be something there.
Most definitely. And when I was a child, I saw my first shadow person, which is kind of what got me interested.
Are you still there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry. I thought I lost you for a second. I was like, it looks like we're supposed to get some rain here.
Oh, yeah, we're supposed to get some here too. So.
Now we have a question from Marla, who's the host of Stirring the Cauldron on Thursday nights. She wants to know if you believe in elementals or demonics.
Wow, that's a good question. I'm not quite so sure. I mean, we've only dealt with one thing that pretty much seemed real negative, but I really don't classify them as demonic. I pretty much think there's a lot of negative elementals, but I don't really classify them as demonic.
Now, have you ever been on a case where you've had an exorcism or a demonologist or an exorcist work, you know, a case with you?
Actually, before we started Heritage Paranormal, at that one site where we encountered something in the basement with the awful smells, one of my friends brought Andrew Calder out, who is a demonologist, and he was actually down in the basement with us.
Okay. Now, do they work? They work. I haven't experienced that, and I know we have Bishop Long here, who's a demonologist and an exorcist with the old Roman Catholic Church. What was your thoughts of when they came in, you know, and work in the case? Were you scared, impressed? You know, were you curious?
I was pretty much curious. I had never been around any one who had, you know, was in the field with demonology, and he pretty much came out to do like a preliminary reading of the place, and he did deem that it was some kind of demonic entity, so he came back at a later time and did the cleansing of the site.
Okay. We have Chuck Amanya. Chuck, he's out of Minnesota. He wants to know if if that photo of the apparition is available online, if you can take a look at it.
Yeah, just email me at Heidi@heritageparanormal.com, and I'll be glad to send it.
Okay. Chuck, if you got that, if not, let me know, and I'll get you that email address to you so you can get, you can look at that photo if you'd like. Jimmy, who's a host of Ghost Chatter on Wednesday nights, we have a lot of hosts from other shows on here, he wants to know, have you ever used lasers when investigating and looking for shadow people?
Yes, we have. We were at a really old primitive church, and we were using lasers, and a shadow person actually broke the laser.
I haven't seen that person. Are those lasers, when you're using lasers, is it just like one of those laser pointers, or is there like a special laser you have to use?
We have the laser pointers, and my husband has a leveler that has a laser on it with its own little tripod stand. So that way, you know, if you have any movement of your hand and all, you can pretty much discount that.
Okay. Now let's continue our conversation. There's a lot of, I don't know if you read a lot of forums or not. I myself do, because I want to pick up new information. But there seems to be a lot of chatter in the paranormal community about unity. Do you think there's unity in the field, or do some groups need to work on that, or what's your opinion on unity in the paranormal field?
Unity is actually something that the paranormal field needs more of. I think more groups should network together, share information, investigate together, because when you don't have unity and you constantly have drama or something, you're taken away from actually helping someone.
I totally agree with you on that, definitely.
So that's why, you know, we, after Phantom Fest, we were inviting some other groups to go on investigations with us, and that way, you know, you can build a good rapport, you can help people, because you never know when you're going to need somebody's assistance, or they might need you, and it just looks bad to a potential client if they research you on the internet and they find out, you know, you're arguing with Group A and Group B over a fight in Kalamazoo, Michigan or something, and you know, they don't need to see that, and it makes you really look bad if you're engaging in something like that. So, you know, we strive to, you know, have unity with everybody.
And that's what we do. With the mission statement of Peach State, you know, I mean, when it comes to, like a big topic is sharing of evidence. I know there's some evidence that, you know, you can't share, because if you're doing a private residence, you know, out of respect
right.
of that residence, you're not going to share the information. But, and, you know, like when you go to, like, a historical site, I like investigating historical sites, and, you know, what's wrong with posting your evidence, you know? Some groups will, and then when, you know, you post it on these forums and say, hey, listen to this EVP or look at this photo, you know, you're bound to some constructive criticism, you know? I mean,
right.
not everything you capture is going to be paranormal. I mean, ghosts don't happen on a click of your, snapping your fingers.
Right.
So, you know, it's like, you know, if you post your evidence and share it, you're gonna be bound to some constructive criticism. How else are you gonna learn? You know, if you don't, you know, take feedback from some people, and a lot of people get offensive to constructive criticism. Now, what's your view on sharing evidence?
We are all for sharing evidence unless it's something that the property owner wants to keep private.
Definitely.
I think it's great to share evidence because, actually, we've shared evidence. We've had a group contact us that had done an investigation at a site, and they wanted to compare evidence because they got some footage that is almost identical to footage we got.
True, and that's what it's about. You know, each group, society, team helping one another out to make, you know, is this really paranormal activity? And if a group's been there prior and they have the same exact thing, then it validates each group's, you know, evidence that they caught.
Right, and it also helps the client in the end to say, look, I had two separate groups who aren't even familiar with each other get identical evidence.
True, and that's one thing is, do you think we'll ever see, you know how they have the Better Business Bureau and Good Housekeeping Seal, will there ever be, you know, a paranormal housekeeping seal, or even, you know, some sort of standardization in the paranormal field?
I would like to see it. Actually, when we went to Ghost Dog, there was an investigator by the name of Dusty Smith who has Daytona Beach Paranormal. And she was saying we need to have, like, a paranormal Better Business Bureau, because the groups who go out and trespass and take pictures and, you know, then post them without permission, and other groups, you know, who don't want to be unified, are really giving everybody a bad name. So she said, you know, it would be great if everybody could just bond together and have a network where that way the client could go to a certain site or call a certain number and check and make sure somebody's on the up and up.
I agree with you. It's like, what do you think of you know, everyone watches, I'm sure, I don't, you probably have. Have you ever watched Ghost Hunters on TV?
Oh, yes.
And
I haven't watched it lately, but I've watched it.
And, you know, they do have their TAPS family members, you know. Well, what's your opinion on groups becoming TAPS family members? Do you think that helps groups? Does it hurt groups? Do you hear nightmare stories?
Well, I think it helps groups, but it can probably hurt in some ways. I know one group we've talked to that is actually going to come to Phantom Fest. They're a TAPS family member, and they stay busy every weekend. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, every single weekend. And I thought, just wow. And they said, you know, it kind of helps, though, for the client when they say, oh, we're a TAPS family member, because TAPS is recognized by so many people for their show. But I think, you know, as far as the investigations, you can probably get overwhelmed and have, you know, people from all walks of life and, you know, people who may not even have a haunting try to get you to come out just because of TAPS and who you are and what you do.
True, and that brings up, you know, with Ghost Hunters and all that, all the thrill seekers out there, and it brings up another, this, I've been discussing this quite a bit on my show, and this brings up another question, is fabricating of evidence. I'm sure you've seen some out there, you know. People do post, you know, fake evidence out there. What's your opinion on fabricating evidence?
I think it really hurts, especially if you are a property owner. One is a place in Georgia that, and a group was investigating. It wasn't our group, but they were walking through, and they had been witnessing some chairs and stuff moving on a table, and they went into this back room, and they caught employees sneaking in a back door, you know, doing stuff. So it kind of hurts when you, you know, catch somebody doing that just because they want to be recognized or boost their business or whatever the case may be. I mean, you can get evidence. It takes, you know, a lot, you know, to sit in a dark room or listen to many hours of EVP, but it really hurts your credibility as a group if you're fabricating evidence or if a client is fabricating evidence.
Then that brings up the episode of, I don't know if you've seen it, TAPS was at the Moss Distillery, and you would think that, like, when you do your pre-investigation walkthrough, when you're talking with the client and, you know, you make sure that, you know, nothing's staged and all that, and, you know, they showed it to where they, you know, they pretty much got duped, because this place, the Moss Distillery, was pretty much like a fun factory.
Right.
But going on the subject of, you know, we talked about unity, we're talking about fabricating of evidence, you know, there seems to be a lot of talk, too, with paranormal groups about these groups, some groups charging for investigations.
Yeah, and that's something I just don't agree with. Because I look at it this way, you know, we spend a lot of money and time going in, and, you know, somebody has a genuine need, and they're already scared if they are encountering something paranormal. And charging them X amount of money is wrong, especially if, you know, we're not like plumbers. We don't have licenses. We don't have a Better Business Bureau. So how do they, you know, a client has no way of knowing what kind of people we are when we even come in. And charging them money if they're really scared or encountering something and have questions is just totally wrong.
Do you think, you know, I think that's where we're going to see more and more fabricating of evidence, is with these groups that, you know, they charge these homeowners for these investigations. They don't catch anything. They then have a heart and say, or, you know, they're like, you know what, we didn't catch anything, but we have to show the homeowner something. Do you think, I think that, my opinion is you're going to see a lot more of that and a lot more of fabricating of evidence. And then
that's definitely going to cause a problem.
And then
yeah.
you know, the paranormal field's going to get a bad name, and it's going to, you know, you have, you know, bad groups and you have these good groups. These good groups then have to go in and clean it up, and it shouldn't be like that in the first place. What's your opinion on that?
I definitely think it's going to cause a problem, because a lot of people, you know, or a lot of groups or investigators so badly want to show, you know, the client evidence. And I tell a lot of new investigators that, you know, contact us or want to investigate with us, that sometimes we may have to go to a site two or three times. You know, you're not going to get evidence the very first night you go. You might if you're lucky, but it's few and far between. So I make sure that we also tell a client, you know, if you've got something going on and we don't find any evidence the first night, you may require a follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
And also what is very hurtful, I think, to the community is there are some sites who may not have much activity, but now that, you know, all the ghost hunter shows and places are being haunted, they want to charge groups astounding amounts of money to come out. And, you know, some I've actually heard say they don't care if there's paranormal activity or not, they just want money.
Sure. Now, like, okay, Waverly Hills, you know, they charge it's for all-night investigations $1,000, but the money that's used for that, you know, these groups pay to investigate Waverly is to help restore Waverly, and what they've done is amazing. And it's like, and then what makes me mad is, like, you know, okay, have you seen the episode of Taps where they went to the St. Augustine Lighthouse?
Yes.
Now, trying to investigate there, if you want an all-night investigation, it's like, I know a five-hour investigation is $2,000. That doesn't, you know, when you're charging these groups that absorbent amount of money, that's it deflates you. It's like, you know, you're all excited, maybe, hey, we can get into this lighthouse, but when you hear the prices of the investigation, that just deflates the groups.
It really does, and I can see, like, Waverly charging money because they've done wonderful things, and one of our things is we do stand for historic preservation. But if you've got a local place local to you that's charging like $250 just for you to set foot in the door just because they want the money and don't care about what you're doing, that kind of, you know, brings you down as well.
Mm-hmm. And you know, historical preservation. We were in – you want to talk about a historical society that's really working their butt off is Barberton, Ohio. If you get a chance, Google search Barberton, Ohio, and their historical society. What they've done there is just absolutely amazing. And I went with Caps, Dave, and Tom, with Tom's wife, Bobby, myself, and my wife, Denise. We were the first group to investigate the Barberton Barns and the Tracy Block. Cause they know the history. They got, I believe the guy's name is Scott. If I'm wrong, Dave and Tom will type that in the chat room for me. He's like he's the founder of the historical society, and he knows the history inside and out, and it's just awesome what they're doing. And, you know, they're preserving the history of that town because it was based on that town was formed by OC Ohio Columbus Barberton, you know, and they wanted, you know, if they knew back in the 60s and 70s before they tore down a lot of buildings, what the history of the town is, you know, they would have been like, they're kicking themselves in the head now. But I'm all for historical preservation. I love it. I like doing the research about it. It's awesome. Oh, we're ringing.
Hello? Hey!
Sorry about that. Did I lose you? I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was like, I wonder what happened. I wonder if I probably had a blip in my, because we're getting storms here right now.
Oh, okay, that might be.
I forget. Oh, we were talking about Barberton, Ohio. So if you get a chance ever to go up there, I highly recommend it.
That is awesome. One of the reasons we picked Abbeville is because it's a very historic town that very few people know about. It is the town that South Carolina seceded from the Union.
Cool. I mean, that sounds very historic, and I hope I get to go. I'm gonna do everything I can. I'm gonna beg and plead with my wife. But
yeah, y'all definitely have to come. It's the 17th through the 19th of October.
And I would hopefully we can my group and your group can get together before that, and, you know, maybe just sit down and have a chat or even go on an investigation. That would be awesome.
That would be great. We would love that.
So, well, we only have a few minutes left, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to give the mic to you. If you want to go ahead and plug Phantom Fest again, and your website for everyone to come to visit, and any other information you'd like, please feel free to right now.
Okay. Phantom Fest is held in Abbeville, South Carolina, October the 17th to the 19th. It's going to be our second annual. Registration is $45. For more information, go to www.phantomfest.com. And for our group, you can go to www.heritageparanormalsociety.com. And any investigator group can sign up and chat with us on our forum. You don't have to be in Georgia or USA or anywhere. You know, you can come and just chat with us and share ideas. And if anyone wants to contact me personally, I'm Heidi@HeritageParanormalSociety.com.
Awesome. All right, everyone, make sure you visit those websites. Heidi, if I can have you stay on just for a few minutes, I will be right back with you, and I'd like to personally thank you for being on my show.
Okay, thank you for having me.
Definitely, anytime. If you hold on 1 second, I'll be right back with you. All right,
okay.
Folks. All right, folks, everyone, thank you for tuning in and listening to The Paranormal Divide. We had a great guest tonight, Heidi from Heritage Paranormal. Just to let everyone know, next week's show, I have haunt writer Marla Brooks on my show. That'll be a great show, I'm sure. Everyone take care, and I will see you in about a week. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to The Paranormal Divide with Kurt Smith. Brought to you by the Peach State Paranormal Society. Be sure to join us next time as we cross into the paranormal divide on your source for everything paranormal, Para-X. Any use or rebroadcast of this show without written permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2008.